It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 336 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I get to talk with Joseph Oliveira, the writer and creator of Wendigo Wood, a folk horror comic that is now available on Kickstarter. If you look up Wendigo Wood, of course you probably know the Wendigo by now, and look it up on there, you can find out how you can support and access this great horror comic. And the description is: a retired war veteran's search for his missing daughter leads him to a forest home to the urban legend of the Wendigo. Joseph is also the editor of Afterlight Comics, a British independent horror comic publishing house. He talks about this new Kickstarter as well as another book called Folk Tales of the Cryptids and other projects that Afterlight Comics has coming your way very soon. He's got a lot of interesting things to say about how he puts comics together and gives us a little bit of a perspective on the UK comics market. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get to it.
My world got torn apart the day you disappeared. I think about you every day. I know it. She's out there somewhere. I will find you.
Hi, I'm Joseph Oliveira. I'm the writer of Wendigo Wood. Wendigo Wood is a six-issue folk horror comic series. A retired war veteran's search for his missing daughter leads him to a forest, home to the urban legend of the Wendigo.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Joseph Oliveira, creator and writer from Afterlight Comics. There's many good books out there, including a book with four different stories called Folk Tales of the Cryptids. How are you doing today, Joseph?
I'm very well. Thanks, Wayne.
Did I get your name right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay. I always like to do that, so I'm big on that one. So talk to me about what is Afterlight Comics. I have to admit right off the front that I don't know much about British books anymore. I used to know some about it, but now I don't know all that much. So talk about Afterlight Comics. What is that?
So Afterlight Comics is an independent British horror comic publishing house that I founded back in August 2017 now. So it's not a year old yet, but that's what I founded. And we produce mainly just horror comics. Basically, the Afterlight Comics title comes from reading comics that are best told when the lights are off, when the lights are out, whenever everything's quiet and you can sit back and creep yourself out a bit with a chilling tale of one of our comics.
Now, are you a big horror fan? Is that why you made this company?
Yeah, I am myself. Yeah, I'm frustrated with the lack of choice of horror films out there. I mean, this year has been good for horror movies so far, but I'm just continuously making stories that I would like to see, in a film portrayal.
What about comics, though? I mean, the book that you sent to me, The Folk Tales of the Cryptids, is a comic.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, that's a book based on four short horror tales, each based on like an urban legend. So, like, you've got basically cryptids are creatures that can't be scientifically proven exist, but there's enough information out there to like contest that kind of thing, and there's a lot of big passionate groups out there. I know in America, especially, like for Bigfoot and the big cryptids.
I'm still trying to put the connection between the movies and the books. Do you also get into the movie industry as well as the comics?
Yeah, so I was actually a filmmaker before I started writing comics. I was a filmmaker from the early age of 13 years old. I just pick up a camera and make short films with friends, and then it got a little bit more serious when I was around 18, when I was nominated for a Young Person's BAFTA Award, at the UK Awards. And yeah, I was just continuously making films and won a few awards and made a short film. Never made a feature film, but then like a full-time job got in the way of pursuing that. And I kind of just fell into comics with the whole storyboard inside of it, because when I write a script for films, I storyboard everything, and it just felt so natural to go into comics from a filmmaking perspective for myself.
Now, were you a comics fan before as well?
I wasn't. I only honestly started reading comics, two, 3 years ago now. It started off with The Walking Dead, really. That comic series just showed me and opened my world so that you could have like serious dramas in comic book form. I just thought, you know, it's all superheroes and stuff, and
right,
never get into it that way. But that really opened avenues for myself.
It's interesting because, you know, one of the things I do want to talk with you about is the fact that, you know, you're right in the sense that DC and Marvel are long johns, some of us call it, the companies. They do mostly, I mean, almost to exclusion, superhero books. And, you know, Image will do some once in a while. There's a couple going on right now, I think, that they have that are horror. But I think a lot of the horror stuff tends to be in independent books, because you can do crazy things with your characters. You know, if you've got a character, and, you know, in regular comics, you've got to have your character be there from issue to issue so that they can, you know, the story can keep going. But in this book, like you're doing, you don't necessarily, and in your four stories you show that, you don't necessarily have to have your lead character survive.
Yeah.
To go on. And of course, that adds to the horror of it. So I'm just interested because, you know, it's a need, I think, that a lot of us have when it comes to comics. I mean, I love Batman. Batman's my guy. You know, I enjoy that very much. And I'll do some horror with Batman occasionally. But I don't get as much horror that I think it's well done as we could stand. So I'm glad you're doing this.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I agree. It's not a medium that's very well explored in comics, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So I'm really like trying to tap into that niche of that people that love horror that maybe don't necessarily read comics themselves, that maybe I could bring them into, you know, picking up a Afterlight Comics title.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about these little four short stories? And we'll get into some of the story a little bit. Any chance these might turn into little films?
I'm not actively filmmaking myself. I haven't really since 5-6 years now, but. Mm-hmm. If somebody else wants to pick them up and do something with them, you know, like another company, I'll be happy to assist them.
Okay, very good. Now, at the end of the book, there's something interesting to me. You've got four pages that describe four, I guess what you might want to call them, like creatures or something. I hope the first one is called the Pukwudgie.
The Pukwudgie, yeah.
Yeah, and the second one is the Legend of Momo.
Yeah.
7 feet tall. Sounds almost like a Bigfoot setup there.
Yeah, very much like.
And Chupacabra, which of course is somewhat known in the States because there have been some books that have had Chupacabras as part of the groups and stuff like that. And then there's the Mothman and stuff like that. So are these, I know the Chupacabra, the other ones I'm not as familiar with. Are these legitimate legends that that horror people deal with? Or are these ones, some of these you made up yourself? How does this work?
No, these are all, you know, literally folk tales, folklore, urban legends that people, you know, write stories about. There's reports of sightings of them, like the Momo Man is based in Missouri. And, yeah, the Chupacabras, you know, that has sightings. There's still sightings going on to this day that people, you know, believe exist. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, these are all actual, you know, legends that people believe in and, you know, believe that exist.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to tell you something. When I was a kid, if somebody mentioned Bigfoot, I couldn't sleep that night. I'd be horrified of it and terrified that Bigfoot would show up. Even though I lived in the middle of a town where there were a lot of miners and stuff like that, so there was a lot of people around, I would still go nuts every time somebody would mention Bigfoot, because I was something I didn't understand, and that scared me at that point when I was a kid. So I guess some of these things are some of the same reaction with some people, and that, you know, you see a lot of You know, it's funny because when the X-Files came along, everybody said, we can't be scared anymore. Mm. You know, all this stuff. And then X-Files proved them wrong. Because, you know, we thought, oh, we're too smart for that. We can't be fooled by all that stuff. And then the X-Files came along and blew people out of the water with that kind of stuff. And so now it's great that you're continuing on with that, because I'm just so fascinated by the fact that it's hard to, you know, it's hard to scare people these days.
Mm.
You know, I talk to me about that. I mean, do you think that that's really true, or do you think that the ability to scare people has gotten actually better because there's so much mystery going on in our lives?
I think it has got harder. I think it's especially hard in the medium of comics, obviously, because you haven't, what I especially miss coming from a filmmaking background, I miss not having music.
Mm-hmm.
I could happily have a film that just has no dialogue and just music, build attention in scenes. And that's quite difficult in comics to do. You have the page, full page reveals of big splash pages to maybe make people jump. But from my perspective in writing horror in comics, mm-hmm. I just try and build the tension as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Every character has, you know, you don't know if they're going to stay around. That's horror to me as well. You don't know what's going to happen to them or could happen to them. No one's safe, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And just creating scenes that, you know, build tension. But I do agree. I think it's hard with the amount of media thrown at us these days. We become numb, I think, to, especially with the ongoing news of real life coming at us from all angles.
Right.
Nothing scares us, kind of thing.
No. Although I have to say, there still are things that scare us.
Mm.
You know, it's tapping into those. And in your first story, which is called Sunshine, and there's a reason for that, and you talked about the fact that you don't have music, but there's a mom who sings "You Are My Sunshine, My Only Sunshine" to her child. And, of course, that sets a perfect setting for what goes wrong. And I think the very first story has your very first creature in it. That's the Pukwudgie, right?
That's right, yeah.
That shows up in there. Let's just say that, I don't want to spoil the story, and never do, but bad things happen because the Pukwudgie shows up. Let's just say. And more than that, I don't want to say. And the mom's reaction, I have to say the artwork is really something. You get to see some of this stuff, and I'm not sure who would make this into a movie, but there's one particular illustration where, let's just say that the Pukwudgie is doing the worst part that he can do in the story, and the mom is there with her, you know, screaming and all this stuff, and I'm just kind of like, yikes. You know, when I saw that, I said, wow, that would have to be an R-rated or X-rated, probably not X, but R-rated movie for that. And her reaction is what happens towards the end of the story. So talk about writing a story like this. I mean, okay. Is this based on, of course, yeah, I'm sure you haven't seen a Pukwudgie or probably any of the four that the creatures that we're talking about here. But, you know, you're writing and lettering these stories, and that's, of course, an accomplishment in itself. But let's talk a little bit about what it was to write this. I mean, this is based in the United States in Massachusetts. You've got a mom there, and you've got a child, and things go awry because of the monster in there. So talk about writing this story and what, you know, because you lead off with this story. What is it about the story that you thought was the one to lead off with?
I think mainly to go with the story firstly was to set the tone for the rest of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you read this first story, you know that what you're going into, you know, this is dark. This is not going to pull any punches. And I think it was one of the most grounded stories. I mean, what I try to do in all my writing, and especially with horror, and going back to the previous point about what can scare people, I think is making stories as relatable or as grounded to reality as possible in a horror setting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite close to the bone, and you think, oh, this could happen, you know, or if this did exist, you know, this would be horrific, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, did the artist come up with the design for the puck YG? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, we came up with it. I sent a few concept designs. There's a few, like, Pukawaji images floating about on the internet, you know, just concept designs. But we just, I wrote down necessarily what it needed to look like a description. It's only 3 to 4 feet. It's got, like, a really long nose, mm-hmm. and it's got horns on the back of its head. Mm-hmm. And it carries, like, a small shank as well. Mm-hmm. But we didn't think that. But, yeah, it's totally, like... Then I just left it to the artist, Dominic Ratcho, who's just brilliant as well.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a very scary story. It is a good place to start because, you know, there's also a little thing that the music that starts at the beginning also she sings at the end, but it's a totally different experience when she's doing that. So I liked that real well. I thought that was a really good story. And then we get Papa, which is a totally different story. And you don't identify exactly where this is happening. But I assume this is also in the United States, the Papa?
Yeah, United States, but originally, you know, it could be Mexico, I thought, as well, on a farm.
Okay. Because you have the second creature, which is the Momo, which is 7 feet tall. See, in the States, like I said, we would consider that something like Bigfoot, but it's a little different in the sense that, it is something like, because the terrible odor and the large pumpkin-shaped head.
What I wanted to do with that was I didn't want to go for all these, like, obvious big known cryptids, creatures. I wanted to shed some light on, you know, little known. Basically, if you know Bigfoot, you know kind of the story. I mean, this is very similar looking to it, but it just sheds more light on another variation of Bigfoot kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you got a different artist on this story. How did you get the art teams together? Did you have, like, all of them working on different stories? Did you know these artists? Did you find them online? How did you bring in these artists?
So it was, I think, Folk Tales of Cryptids, it was over 12 different artists. Mm. Had a different artist for the cover. There was a different artist for each of the four stories, as well as a different colorist for each of the four stories as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was just a matter of fact, putting out, like, a few Facebook posts and artist groups saying, I've got this job coming up. If you'd be interested, it helps if, you know, you've done horror before, so I can... you know, see, you know, if you're capable of capturing the effects that I want. I did it that way, really. And very fortunately, you know, they're all fantastic, and it was very easy to work with all of them, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, the first story, of course, is something that happens is a deer gets trapped in a deer trap or a bear trapper or something. And then of course, then the Momo appears and then things start to go downhill from there. What's interesting is that humans don't show up until we get near the end of the story.
Yeah.
And then things start, you know, I just, yikes. You know, I don't want to spoil any things, but let's just say that it's called Papa because things happen to the father of this child, which I won't describe. And then towards the very end, we see something that I think happened, but I'm not exactly sure. Let's just say that they're out hunting, so there's guns involved. And at the very end, we kind of see the son sort of retaliate against the Momo. And I'm never quite sure what happened with that, and that's probably part of the horror is to not know. Mm-hmm. I mean, did the child get attacked, or did the child manage to kill the Momo, or what happened? So I don't know, and I think that's kind of good. I like that about that. Am I on with that, or is there a more clear ending than I'm seeing?
No, you're definitely on the mark with that one. I didn't want to, show you it all, and you know, I want some things to be left to interpretation. But you're right on with that. Yeah, I like to leave things on. You know, I don't have to, nothing. Everything doesn't have to be, cookie filled. If that's the quote.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be completely clear. I there are some people who write, and they write in such a way that everything is completely explained. There's no mystery to it, and also sometimes they do it verbally a lot of the time, and that always. that baffles me because I don't particularly care for that. I would much rather than, you know, the marriage of the art and the story. You know, you bring an artist along to sort of display the story. You don't necessarily need all the words. Mm-hmm. And I think that one with Papa, I think that was a great one. I think that the artwork is really good. It's set in, of course, in a forest kind of a setting. And, boy, I really like that. The whole business. And then when you got the child up against the Momo, I'm kind of like, yikes.
Yeah.
So I did like that.
Cool, thank you.
We get to number three, Remember Me, which is like 180 degrees the other way. This one has to do with a couple, and they've aged over time. And what's happened is it looks like the forgetfulness has set in on one of the two. And it's kind of an interesting thing to see. And then, of course, what happens is this is the chupacabra who comes involved. And let's just say they start to notice that bad things are happening to the livestock that they have. And the husband goes out to deal with it. But then at the end again, of course, things don't turn out as we expect towards the end, which I really like. Talk about that one. I mean, the whole notion of bringing in like the woman who doesn't remember as much. Was that, I mean, do you know somebody with that kind of experience, or is this something you've been reading about? How did you decide to put that as part of the story?
Yeah, so Remember Me was probably the most personal story to myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's the woman that you speak of, she's suffers from Alzheimer's,
mm-hmm.
Which my nan suffered from and passed away from.
Okay.
So when I was writing that, I was obviously, I grew up with my nan having Alzheimer's, so I knew what it was like, and I could totally feel from the husband's perspective of how that would feel. And basically she can't remember who he is or what he looks like.
Mm.
And he's kind of cursed with, you know, what did he do to deserve, his wife do to deserve this? And obviously he's got having bigger problems than that.
Yeah, what's really sad is the way that it ends, and I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say that it went the worst way it could go, in my opinion. You know, the Alzheimer's and all those things, and then you're a farmer, and apparently they're out in the middle of nowhere, like, basically. And, you know, the chupacabra gets involved, and I felt so badly with the ending, you know. But I think that's kind of what you're after. Then the husband's reaction to what's happening is interesting. And then, of course, we see that the chupacabra may not necessarily be alone in this.
I felt it was bittersweet kind of thing because he's been living with his wife who's been like this and for so long, and it's been a strain for him. And in those short moments, he feels alive again, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's kind of wow. Well, it's just, he's not going to be around much longer to enjoy it, unfortunately, it looks like. But it's interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting way to do it because it's a little freedom, even if it's a short-lived freedom for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So that was something. I mean, you know, what was that like with your experience? I mean, did your nan pass away? You said that she passed, but, I mean, what was that like for your family?
It's just a terrible disease. It's absolutely awful, and I don't wish it on anybody. It's just you see the person you love deteriorate in front of you, and not being able to remember you or remember memories, or it's just a horrible, horrible disease. So,
well, that's tough. You get some of the sadness in the story from that. That's why I asked that question, because, you know, it's tough when the person that you've known and loved your whole life doesn't recognize you anymore. That's a difficult experience to go. And so you could draw on that as far as like in the characterization of what happened with that. So that story ends up really interestingly. I like that. And then the last one is called Romance is Dead. And I got a kick out of it because, again, you're going in a totally different direction from the other stories. It's two lovers are out kind of in a lover's lane kind of a setup. And they start to... Well, I don't want to get too much into the story, but something starts to happen to them, or at least around them. And before you know it, things are not good. And it ends in such a way that the two lovers, their love story is not going to probably continue at the end of this. shall we say. And of course, now the creature involved with this is the Mothman, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, the Mothman is rather large, with great big wings, and you know there's interaction between the two, and we get involved with that when something interrupts them, and then they start to get into stuff. And I was really interested because you know that kind of a story, you know, a short story like this, you've got to get us involved with the characters pretty quickly, and I think you did a really good job of that.
Oh.
You've got the two of them; they don't necessarily get along as well as they might like, but and I'm going to get towards things start to happen around them. You feel for them, and right away one of them goes down, and then the other is trying to get away. But let's just say that person may not get too far, shall we?
Go?
Yeah. So talk about the Mothman, because I don't know much about the Mothman.
Really? Okay. So that's probably one of the most popular out of the cryptid folklore. It's got like 13 feet wingspan. It's like a hybrid between a man and a bird. I'd say they have statues. I can't remember where it's originates from, but it's there's all this folklore about a bridge and involving the Mothman and some serious accident that happened on a bridge. The Mothman appearance is stopped around then. But,
I'm kind of fascinated. Is this an American legend or is it UK?
That is, yeah. American.
Are all these American? Because it seems like, well, Chupacabra tends to be like South American and Middle America.
Chupacabra is more South America, yeah, but predominantly the rest of those cryptids are American-based, yeah.
Interesting. I mean, are there British cryptids that you guys know of?
So, have you heard of Loch Ness?
Yes, of course, yeah. Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, in Scotland.
Yeah.
But that's really the top one. We really don't have that many, really, down here.
Because, man, in America, we've got lots.
Yeah, you've got lots of wild and unexplored territories and stuff like that.
Well, not even in those kinds of territories, we'll see. Like, there's the New Jersey Devil.
That's right, yeah.
Which is in New Jersey, which is not a... it takes place largely in populated areas. Quite the nasty little thing that one is. And, of course, a lot of the stuff came to light during the aforementioned X-Files. You know, X-Files had all that stuff. The characters were fair. You know, one of the things I liked about the your four stories, too, is that they don't necessarily come out of it well. I always liked that Mulder and Scully were getting the tar beat out of them. And these shows. There was one where they had little green lightning bugs or something, and they were in a Jeep, and they couldn't get out of the Jeep, and the lightning bugs was just chewing them to bits. And the next thing we see is them in the hospital just bitten, you know, apart. And I was like, goodness, because, you know, when you deal with the unknown, you don't necessarily come out well. You know, so I that's one of the themes, I think, in the four stories you're doing is that, you know, when you come across these things, you know, be prepared for the worst.
Yeah, I'm not writing fairy tales. These are folk tales.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. So, okay, so how does one get a hold of Folk Tales of the Cryptids?
So you can go on afterlightcomics.com. Mm-hmm. That's our own store on there. Our website directly.
Okay.
We're not on Comixology yet.
Okay. Oh, so you are in Comixology. That's always good. I always like to promote Comixology because let's say you want to get a paper copy. It may take a while for you to get your paper copy, especially if you're coming from the UK or something like that for here in the States. So it's really good to see that you can do those. And I think that the PDFs and good things like that are really making it easier to get a hold of a variety of comics storytelling, which I like too. So I think that's a good thing. Well, I'm glad you're doing that. It's a good thing. Is there anything else that your company is offering right now? I mean, I like this book a lot, and I'm glad you're doing it. Does Afterlight Comics have any other offerings?
So, we've got the brand new Kickstarter going live in less than 12 hours.
Oh, from when we're recording. Okay. Yeah. What's it for?
Wendigo Wood.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's it. Now, my understanding is that all these stories take place in the same universe as Wendigo Wood?
Yeah, so Folk Tales of the Cryptids was like a short version of the stories of the cryptids, where this is more a more long-form version of a cryptid-focused story. This is 6 issues, Wendigo Wood. It's folk horror comic series.
So who's the artist on that one?
The artist is, I've never pronounced his name out loud. It's Ivakovic Buscan. It's from Serbia.
I butcher people's names, especially if they're beautiful, exotic names. I've had some people whose names are so great I couldn't do it, and I would ask them to say their own name because I just can never get it quite straight. But so what's the basic storyline of this book that's coming?
So basically, it's it follows a retired war veteran, Hank Williamson, and his daughter's been missing since he's returned from a Korean War. He's a retired vet now. And his search leads him to a forest, which is home to the urban legend of the Wendigo.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is, according to the information you sent to us, it starts on, by the time this posts, it's already underway. It started on June the 27th. How long is this Kickstarter going to be going on for? Do you have an end date in mind?
Yeah, so it'll be the standard 30 days.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the end date on that is. It might be, I'm guessing, it'll be the 27th of July.
Okay. Yeah. So you go to 20. Okay, so that'll be on us, according to what I see. Let me see. I'm going the wrong direction here. I think 27th of July is a Friday. And you can get that. You can go, now, are there... you said this is a 6-issue series?
That's right, yeah.
So it's going to be in there. So if you contribute or participate in this project, do you get all 6 issues, or does it vary by what you decide to support?
No, so this is just for issue 1.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, issue 1 of Wendigo Wood. Yeah, it's brand new comic series we're just launching.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of interested because, of course, Wendigo is another one of those American legends that I'm familiar with. I've seen it. I think it was in the first season of Supernatural.
Yeah, I just told that. It was in an episode. I'll have to watch that now.
Yeah, it was in Wendigo. They had the Wendigo and stuff. And, of course, Marvel Comics had, I think, Wendigo.
Yeah.
As a character as well. So it's kind of stuff. So, well, that's great. I'm glad you're going to get to do a Kickstarter and get to support this stuff. Are you going to be, you're going to be making paper copies then of Wendigo Wood?
Yeah, absolutely. So you'll have digital copies, physical copies. If you pledge for a physical copy, you get the digital copy absolutely free as well. We've got T-shirts, an awesome poster. I don't know if you've seen it, by Chris Sheehan as well.
Cool.
Yeah. One of the higher tiers is a signed script as well that you could get.
Okay. Are these going to be available in the States? I mean, Comixology, obviously, you can get the digital versions. What about the paper copies? Are they going to be available through, like, Diamond?
No, it'll be available through the Kickstarter worldwide. You know, this is our sixth Kickstarter campaign now.
Oh, wow.
So we've always shipped worldwide to everybody. We don't exclude anybody.
Oh, cool. Very nice, very nice, because that's a good way to do it, especially with horror. I think that there's a very devoted following for horror books.
Yeah.
Now, I think if you've ever read, like, Cullen Bunn stuff,
absolutely.
He does a lot of things like that, and he's often, like, the sixth gun, and he's doing another one. I can't remember what the name of it is right now, but he's got an ongoing. It's got to issue number 32 already. I was noticing. So, you know, horror has a very strong following. And it's a way, I don't think that anybody has completely reached the place that we like to go with horror yet. So I'm hoping that you get to do that.
Awesome.
That'd be fun. Now, you're the editor of Afterlight Comics. Is that what this is?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so you also write and letter?
Yeah, I write letter and practically everything other than the art.
Okay, so that's good. There's no other writers then, basically, on what you're saying. You're the writer of the bunch.
Yeah, just strictly myself, yeah.
All right. So that'll be good. So do you have any other plans coming up for Afterlight Comics?
So after Wendigo Wood this month, we've got the 4th issue of Ghost Island.
Okay.
That's a supernatural horror series we've got going. It's basically Jurassic Park, but with ghosts. That's the pitch. Hmm. And that's coming to the end of its series run. So, yeah.
Cool. Are these all out on Comixology?
We're not on Comixology yet. There's a thing where it's quite difficult for people in the UK to set up Comixology accounts with, like, tax numbers. It doesn't really transfer well to the US system, so it's a bit of a headache. So that it's a very time consuming. So it's on the list of things to do. But everything's available on the afterlightcomics.com, either digital PDF or physical copy as well.
Cool, very cool. And I as far as British stuff goes, I like I said, there's a thriving British comics industry over there in the UK, much more than many of us in the States know about. So, you know, to get to talk with you and to get to explore some of these things, I think is really great. See, the thing I'm interested in, though, is why you decided to set this company up and go into comics, particularly because you weren't all that familiar with comics. That must have been quite an educational process for you.
Absolutely. I'm learning every day still. You know, I'm not ignorant to say, oh, I know what I'm doing now, literally every day I'm learning. But it started off with Ghost Island 18 months ago. It was issue one, and I was going up and down the country. I did about 28 conventions in the year, just trying to get the readership and get it in as many people's hands as possible. And I was starting to get new ideas then, and I didn't want to just be known for this one comic. You have to be known for like a brand, or you know, something people that could recognize you for and say, oh, that's Afterlight Comics, I know their comics, I like their titles. And that was really the thinking behind the just founding the company, really. I mean, it's non-profit, we're not, you know, we don't make any money or but it's obviously creator owned, and we fund through our Kickstarters.
So the money goes to pay like the other talent, the artists, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. All the artists are paid their page rate and everything.
Oh, good. Because some folks don't do that, you know. Some folks say, you know, you'll do that for the publicity and then you'll get paid work and stuff like that. I never know that works.
I don't agree with that at all. The amount of time that goes into a page, you know, it's someone's, you know, if they're doing it full time, you know, you have to pay them, basically. It's simple as that, and I have no qualms about that.
Okay. Well, the Kickstarter is for Wendigo Wood, and when this posts, you're going to be able to support that, and it goes until the end of the month, and I want to make sure that you get a chance to get in and enjoy the chance to support this book, because I think it's a great book. And then the other book, which is already available, is called Folk Tales of the Cryptids, and your previous one, Ghost Island. You Kickstarted number 3 already, and I guess it won't be long. You'll be up to number 4. You'll be doing that
in August. You can also, if you pledge for the Wendigo Wood, you can also like add rewards, like so you can add our previous titles to your reward as well and get it all bundled in if you'd like.
Very good. Well, Joey, I think this is a great start. I think that there's a lot in horror that has yet to be explored, despite what some people think. And I think you're doing a good job of poking around in there and showing us what we can still be scared by. So I hope you have much success, and I hope your Kickstarter is also a success, and you get to keep doing all these good things, because I think that there's a lot of horror that is yet to be told, and I think you can do a good job of it.
Oh, thanks very much, Ryan. Appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another interview with a great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.